This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. I'm feeling excited, man. I've been, I don't know how many Big Ten tournaments. I don't know why I'm so, you know, the juices are starting to flow. 11:30 matchup, Michigan-Indiana joining me to not only preview that, but to reflect upon what we saw this team do without Hunter down in Columbus, senior day against the Buckeyes. It's a shot, no less, right? And they got shot in that game by these Wolverines who, you know, an inspired performance on both ends of the floor. Joining me to talk about that here on the MGo Blog Roundtable, guy who started it all at MGo Blog, Brian Cook. Brian, how are you this morning?
Good. Jaron Falds, minutes in a win. There you go.
Seth Fisher, also MGo Blog. How are you?
My heart goes out to anyone who put money on that game after the refs told them that was fixed for Ohio State, because, oh boy, did that screw them.
It sure did. And my guy, Craig Ross. Craig, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I agree with Brian. Jaron Falds had a couple good minutes in that game, played some nice defense. Good, you know, good for him.
This Brian Cook is when Devontae Jones commits to Michigan. This was the type of versatility, scoring, setup. This was the kind of performance that you thought you would see. This was a guy putting a team on his shoulders. He shot it at a decent clip, but really his command, attacking the rim, whether it was finishing himself, turning down a ball screen, dropping it off to other guys in a pick and roll. He just really commanded that game for Michigan on a day where they absolutely had to have someone else really step up and do it.
Yeah, I mean, he's finished the Big Ten season shooting like 54% from two. And this is a guy who was at Coastal Carolina last year. And this is not a guy who's particularly athletic, right? So he's got a lot of craft to his game. And it just took him, I think, a little while to get adapted to what he was facing on a weekly basis. Sort of like Mike Smith, but, you know, Mike Smith was 5 foot. And Jones has a lot more size, so he was able to translate a little bit better. And he started to hit some threes. So one of the key points in this game was that they kept going under screens, and Devontae was able to pull up a couple times and actually knock down some shots. And that's really the last thing that he needs to be able to do a little bit. Because last year he was like a 33% three-point shooter, and if he can hit him at that kind of clip, then going under starts to look unattractive and the offense opens up even more for him. You're going to get some more roll action in the offense, which is always good.
Is that who Chris Holdman was talking about in his post game? He's like, hey, well, I'm not going to get upset about a guy who hits 25% from three, you know, hitting some threes. I'm not going to change my game plan based on that. Was that who he was talking about?
Devontae? Yeah. I mean, yeah. Cause he was shooting 25% in Big Ten play. Until it hit. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, it's a reasonable strategy to execute. And he's been better historically. And it's not like the shots he's getting up are contested particularly, right? So it's if he can just get back to his baseline from Coastal Carolina, then I think he's going to give teams a lot of problems.
Yeah, I question that because I wondered if he was talking about Terrence Williams, Seth, because T. Will, you look at, he's a 40% three-point shooter. So when I made it, was a pretty bold statement, I guess, that I think that he has a chance to, by the end of his career, be shooting the basketball from that position the way that Isaiah Livers did I mean, if shooting 40% this year, if he can continue that with greater volume than which he's going to have next year, I think there's, with the work that he put in this offseason and the results that we're seeing come from it, the fact that it's not just wide open threes, he's hit a couple with a hand in his face. I think he has a chance, a real good chance of doing that, you know, as he gets deeper into his career, junior and senior years.
Yeah, I don't think Williams' problem has ever been, like, his three-point shot's always been fine. Last year, he had a streak where he missed a bunch of wide-open ones and just maybe got in his head or something, but his form looked good. It's kind of what he was from a scouting perspective. And when Jones is breaking down the offense, or breaking down the defense like that and creating opportunities for him in transition, that's where he's always been money. And I think, it goes back to the games that Jones had. Matt D put together an article for us this week about the things that Jones was doing that we hadn't really seen from him before. One of them is just, you know, they tried to, he anticipated they were going to go find him on the other side of the screen, so we just back cut him right down the lane. And that was that huge play where, you know, he gets the ball, sets up Liddell, and he's like, where, you know, you and I are going man-on-man right now, beats him. Liddell fouled him hard, sent him to the floor. And, you know, this is rewatching the game. I was even more mad because I could pause it and look back and be like, nope, I actually didn't miss that. That was actually really bad. But, like, the fact that he wasn't going to get anything if he drew contact, and that was a big part of his game at Coastal Carolina, and he can't get a call for the life of him here at Michigan. But he's still going and making those shots through contact. He's still pushing that. And he also pushed the play. He was able to break a trap to get Terrence Williams one of those open shots. And that unlocks a piece of Terrence Williams that we haven't really had. Michigan hasn't had a transition game that much this year. They have not been able to break down the defense because the point guard actually beat somebody off a screen or something. And that's what opens up Terrence Williams.
Yeah. Another huge component in this game, Craig, was, you just heard Seth mention E.J. Liddell. They had to have a plan for E.J. Liddell, right? I mean, he took him to work. He put some work in on him the last time. What was it, 28 points? Of course, the officials had something to do with that. They're going to give him every benefit of the doubt. I don't know why, but he gets every call. But how could you sort of improve the part of the game that you can control, right? Michigan brought the hammer down with the double team, and he never, and they doubled, not just him, they doubled Joey Brunk when he was in there too. But Ohio State never adjusted to that. That was a big defensive key, as was the number of steals that Michigan got that day, 12 points off a turnover.
Yeah, you're correct. And I, last night I looked at your site and I didn't listen to you and Tim talking, but Tim had mentioned that they brought the double team from the baseline, which is pretty unusual. And so I thought, how did I miss that? And so this morning early, I got up and was fast forwarding through the tape, and damn if that wasn't true. And it was effective. And they did get two or three steals when Liddell or Brunk wasn't prepared for the double team coming from the opposite way from when you generally see it. Now, for whatever reason, Ohio State chose not to post Liddell up all that much, but when they did, it wasn't particularly effective because that double team did have an impact. In fact, I think he only scored maybe one basket off a post entry in the whole game. And so that worked well. You can't say enough offensively or defensively about what Devontae did in this game. Uh-huh. He was absolutely tremendous. And I'm thinking back to when Michigan was looking in the portal, and they were looking at Fats Russell, I think, and maybe they lost. That was the noise, at least. They lost Fats Russell, who hasn't been as good as Devontae. They lost the kid at Michigan State, who was at Northeastern, who's a nice player, but I don't think he's been as good as Devontae either. So I don't know if, you know, how they put Devontae in that ordering, but I think of those three guys that we heard about, he's been the best. And to be honest, I know he's older. I think he may be pushing 24, 23, 24 years old. I would love to see him back next year.
Yeah. And, I think it's 24. I'll look it up real quick.
Yeah, and so I'm not saying that's realistic. It may be not be the greatest thing for Frankie, who's showing some improvement and needs time. But man, Devontae is playing better and better as the season has gone along. And the thing that you mentioned about the steals is really incredible, because Michigan, I think coming into the game, was number 335 in the country in steals. And in this game, we had 11. And that, you know, there are turnovers and then there are bad turnovers, and steals are the really bad turnovers. And in this game, Michigan came out with 11 steals, and that was definitely the difference in the game. Because I think if you look at the number of shots taken, I think Michigan ended up with 18 more shots in the game. When you adjust for free throws, it's maybe 13 or 14. But still, that's an incredible difference. You shoot 18 more times, you're probably going to win.
It was 13.
I think free throw adjusted, it's 13, because we had 13 more possessions, right?
So. Yeah, he turns 24 on the 9th. And so I agree. You could really, really see how he could benefit from another year. But you wonder if a guy at that age just feels like, if I'm getting paid to develop full time,
yeah,
maybe that'll be the path for me to get to where I want to be as a professional. So I don't know. I think NIL could have something to do with that as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is, right? It's going to be Devontae Jones is going to be looking at this as a job, right? So if Michigan is coming in with an offer that's competitive with what I assume will be agents talking to him about Europe, mm-hmm. then he might stay because it's a better opportunity. But that's going to have to be what it is.
Yeah, no doubt. A guy who I definitely think, we've talked about this before, will be coming back, is Caleb Houston. Now, ordinarily, you'd see 0-for-10, and that'd be a talking point for us, right?
It's still a talking point.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Well, it might be one of the lead things. You're playing without Hunter, and Caleb goes 0-for-10, and you're on the road. Like, if you tell me those things before the game, like, there's no freaking way they win this game. They probably get run. It speaks to what a great performance you got from Devontae Jones, the clutch shots you got from T-Will. You got some big moments from Moose and Eli. It was all around team victory. But I got to point out with Caleb, yes, he was 0-for-10, but this was maybe the best example of the year for him of severing his offense from his defense. He was bad on the offensive end. He was pretty good on the defensive end, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, there is sort of a caveat, is that the guys that Ohio State running out at the three are Justin Ahrens and Eugene Brown. So he had a couple of nice plays, but, you know, he wasn't going up against, you know, the Keegan Murrays of the league here. It's a guy who only shoots threes, and Eugene Brown, who's basically a, you know, they have a 3-and-D wing concept. He's just an and D wing. I'm glad that he didn't get two down to actually perform, and he was rotating out on those guys well. But yeah, I mean, we had an incredible home road split from Caleb Houston this year, and now there are no more home games, but there are also no more road games. So so what does neutral court Caleb Houston look like is like the key question for the rest of the season.
Here's what. Does the neutral court Caleb Houston look like the Assembly Hall Caleb Houston? Because the Assembly Hall Caleb Houston was pretty freaking good. I mean, that was probably his best road game. Was that the only good road game he had this season? I mean, I can't think of another one that comes close, Seth. I mean, he was down there.
Nothing's coming to mind, no. I mean, Houston, this game was not just, you know, he missed a couple threes and one of them was wide open. The other two, I thought, were like the typical Caleb Houston thing where, like, if you try to get him the ball and have him go up really quickly, he's not very good at that. He's got like a little bit of a wonky shot that goes off the side of his head. He needs to be set. He's a, you know, and they are able to get him that maybe more at Chrysler, and I think that's where that's coming from.
I don't think that's the case, because, I mean, you know, it was late in that Iowa game and they're running like Rip Hamilton curl screens for him. And I'm like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
That's
not his game though.
No, that's not his game. So why are we, that's something to work on in the off season, not when you need a bucket against Iowa for your tournament life. So, I mean, he's basically a standstill shooter with a little bit of upside going to the basket. If he can actually get to the rim, he is 6'8" and long. So he finishes well there.
He doesn't finish well, though. That was the problem this game.
Well,
that was the 0 for 7
when he actually gets to the rim.
Yeah, he just can't finish.
Which is not the case very often.
I mean, that's where he needs to work on the offseason. That will really unlock him as a player because he gets to the rim. And like Brian says, he's 6'8". Like, when he puts his arm up there, the ball is pretty close to the rim when it goes up. He's just a terrible, terrible finisher. He gets blocked all the time. He does not really draw contact, doesn't know how to draw fouls. Like, he could be a player if he could turn into a, if he could just finish at the rim.
That's John Sanderson. That's an off-season endeavor, right? But again, something about that game, I can't remember what the circumstances were. Did they get him an early shot that he saw go in? I can't remember the sequence. I just remember he played well against Indiana. Hopefully.
Well, that I remember that game very specifically as Indiana being totally unable to cover anyone from behind the 3-point line. So that was a game where he got a ton of really good open standstill looks. I mean, Michigan shot 11 of 17 from 3 in that game. So Indiana wasn't covering anybody.
It's interesting because Indiana is sort of the opposite of Ohio State in that Ohio State's a really good offensive team but plays no defense. And Indiana is a really bad offensive team, but is generally really good on defense. I mean, there are certain, I'm looking at KenPom, I think they have them at number 20 defensively in the country. So Indiana will D up, but in that game, Michigan made shots. I mean, that was one of the rare games.
For whatever reason, the actions Michigan was running like completely baffled the Indiana defense. So hopefully that recurs, although I'm sure they're going to look at the film and adjust. I mean, when you look at Indiana, though, it's just like they don't have guys who do two things. They don't have guys who are good three-level scorers. They have a couple of guys who are shooters who are awful inside the line. They have a couple of guys out there pretty much all the time who are non-shooters in Jackson Davis and Race Thompson. They don't have much of a bench. Their bench can't shoot at all. So really, it's just like, can you contain Xavier Johnson? And because I don't think Jackson Davis is going to go off against Hunter Dickinson, but Xavier Johnson is the kind of guard who's given Michigan trouble all year. And even though he's terrible from 2 in Big Ten play, he was effective against Michigan. So if he has a good game, I think Indiana can stick in it. But if he's off, I don't see them keeping pace.
Well, Indiana's lost 7 of their last 9 games. And the wins are against Maryland at home, which, you know, not a great win. And Minnesota, they won in a close game on the road. That's it. Everybody else in the last 9, they've lost to. So this isn't really a good team. They have one good player, basically.
I like Race Thompson, but he's a guy who doesn't generate basically any of his own offense. He's cut garbage man type guy. He's a guy who can help you win some games, so you got to surround him with dudes who are less one-dimensional than all of Indiana's players.
One thing that Sam said intrigued me. Is this a given that Caleb Houston will be back in Ann Arbor next year?
I think he will be back. He'll be back in Ann Arbor next year. Yeah,
he's not.
I wouldn't call it a given, but
like, okay. And what about Musa? Do you have any instinct or feeling about Musa? And if Moose is not coming back, does Brandon Johns get another year? Because, you know, Brandon Johns actually had a really good game against Ohio State. When I go through games, I'm making check marks of pluses and minuses. Man, he had a ton of pluses. He did a lot of good stuff in this game.
Those of you listening on the radio are missing some incredible facial expressions from Brian and Sam right now.
Yeah, Brian is like, is giving me the old woodchuck look. Which he does often, which is okay. I probably deserve it, but really, I think if you go back and look at this game closely, you'll, and in particularly like I'm obsessed about in slow motion, the you'll see a lot of stuff from Brandon Johnson this game that was A+, defensively, offensively. He didn't shoot it great, but everything else was.
He didn't make a shot.
I know.
That's kind of a big deal.
It is a big deal, but but when you look at the other things he did in the game and the other things that lead you to win basketball games, he did them all. And
on a day where you didn't have Hunter Dickinson, I mean, that's one of those times where, I mean, you really, if before the game is played, right, you're like, man, we got to get something from him today. The opportunities are going to be there. And, you know,
yeah,
I mean, you got some positive contributions, but fortunately you had a brilliant performance by Devontae Jones in this contest, and Terrence Williams, T-Will, really came on and picked up the slack in a way that I don't know that you could have predicted. Like, if you had predicted before the game where you were going to get some increased production from, like, who would go more beyond the norm, I think you would have to say, you know, Brandon Johnson's a starter. He's going to get more minutes. You would say him, but man, it didn't work out like that when the game rolled around. He's just is not a confident offensive player right now.
No.
It hasn't been all season.
Honestly, it feels like it would be just cruel to bring him back. Just let him go. Do anything else.
Yeah, change of scenery can do a lot. And I think Michigan will be in the portal. Michigan will be in a portal looking for a replacement if Musa goes. And I have not heard anything to change my mind about the direction with that one. It would be more speculative on my part to say that he'd be returning, but everything coming into the equation, coming into the season with it, was that he would be one and done. The caveat now is that NIL is a possibility, and can an NIL deal be put on the table that will be comparable with a rookie deal? If you can do that, why wouldn't Musa come back? Because his development as being the guy next year, oh my gosh, you got it. I mean, it would be tremendous another year under Juwan for him.
Yeah, and I mean, if he does go, I mean, I don't think you're looking in the portal for a four, right? Because you have Terrence Williams, and honestly, I think in college, Caleb Houston's best spot is going to be the four. Mm. So, I mean, if I'm Michigan and I'm looking in the portal, I'm like, where's Shaundi Brown? That's exactly who I want.
Well, the problem, though, is if Musa goes, they don't have a big.
And they don't have a five, yeah.
They don't have a five at all, except for the
freshman.
Yeah, they have Terrace coming in.
Yeah, but that's one guy.
Sure, but I mean, like, yeah, they'll look for a big in them. But like, in terms of like replacing Musa, I'm not looking for a four on next year's roster. Like, that's set.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I think that if Musa goes, you somehow got to come up with someone who can play the center, and they don't. And that's going to be a hard pull, in my guess, out of the transfer portal. There's going to be fewer of those guys than there are guys that are backcourt guys. They're always.
I don't know. You got Shibway this year. You had Matt Harms. Like, these guys, they're out there.
All right. Well, but that's what they're going to need to do. I mean, if Musa goes, because you can't go into the season with one true freshman center, and that's it.
Well, I mean, that's also assuming that Dickinson ends up going, because Dickinson isn't on anyone's top 100.
And that's a good question. I mean,
and like, so if he's not on a top 100 and he's Hunter Dickinson, he can get an NIL deal here, right? Like,
yeah. You think?
I mean, we think. We keep going around in circles on this same thing. Like, you know, can we get Jones to stay? Can we get Hunter to stay? Can we get Musa to stay? We're hoping NIL changes the math on that. But these are all guys who came back this year expecting to go to the NBA this year, and it's really hard to change the outlook of a player. I think it's easier to recruit someone and be like, hey, why don't you come here, make what you can out of NIL, and then go on to the rest of your career, than it is to convince somebody.
Michigan put $1 million on the table for Hunter Dickinson, he's not getting that anywhere else.
Sure. And sure.
It's worth that.
Sure. I mean, go for it. Please do it. I don't know if Michigan is ready to make those cats to do it in that style yet.
I need him. I need him to be advertising Miami Dolphins tickets in Metro Detroit.
See, I mean, I guess offending the sensibilities of those who have, I think, an archaic look at what intercollegiate. College athletics. I don't need to get in this discussion again. I think this idea that there's this there's this virtue in not being paid to play a sport. If you subscribe to that, then I don't think that your sensibilities would be as offended for paying a guy to getting a guy paid to come back to school. Right? This is not paying a guy to come to your school, which some people might, you know, that might be a bridge too far for some. This is a guy who you're getting to come back to college. How could you, you know, why would that offend anyone's sensibilities that maybe subscribes to the virtue of intercollegiate athletics being a thing? I would think that would.
I want to caution against making it all just about money, though. It's not just who's going to make the most money for me. These guys are people who've been focused on, especially Diabate and Dickinson, are guys who've been focused for a very, very long time, since they were little children, on becoming pro basketball players. This has been the goal their entire lives. And Hunter got to the end of last year, and they told him, look, man, you got to come back, get yourself a three-pointer, show them some defense, show them you have a right hand, and then you'll be an NBA pick. He did that. He's not an NBA pick. He doesn't have a lot further to go. I just think that their mindset, the people themselves have been focused on going to the NBA, not just the dollar sign, not just how much can I make next year. And I agree with Brian. You have to make that case to them. But I think that you're fighting uphill because their mindset for a long time has been, I want to go pro.
I don't disagree.
But you know, the agent who he signs up with is going to be like, nobody's going to draft you. Because he's not on anybody's draft boards. And I don't think that's going to change because of a few games in the tournament, right? Like, if he gets good advice, he's going to know that now is not the time.
Yeah, so I think it boils down to this. If you're Hunter, I mean, you don't have whatever your pro prospects are. They are, I don't think, tangibly harmed by coming, you aren't set back by coming back another year, your pro career. But the benefit legacy-wise, big picture, you know, legacy-wise with Michigan and what your long-term potential is for another year in the uniform, and if you get this $1 million, so it could serve you in the here and now and in the future coming back for another year. I think that's the argument, that legacy-wise, you have a good legacy as a Michigan Wolverine now, right? You come back for another year, man. I mean, your status, your profile in the Michigan community is that much greater. It increases your earning potential down the line, too, I think. And you haven't harmed your pro potential either by coming back around and being coached by Juwan Howard for another year. So I think that's what it boils down to. I don't disagree with you, Seth, for guys who have been in that pro mindset thinking, I'm going to be in the NBA. It may be so much of a thought process that you can't convince them. They just rather go, even if it's G League and I'm getting paid to practice all the time, they would rather do that. I'm just not sure that that's where Hunter is, especially with how much he clearly is enjoying the college life right now.
I mean, he's going to ascend to the number. He's going to be the most popular athlete at Michigan next year. Like right now, it's Naz Hillman. As soon as she's out of the way, he is the most popular athlete on Michigan's campus. Not any of the football players. It'll be him next year. So I think you could sell him on that.
He can go to the G League and he can start a professional career. But can he get Tom Izzo to lose his marbles on the sideline because he's telling everybody that Michigan State centers are too short? You can't do that. You can't get that in the G League.
You can't. All right. We got to get to a break. When we come back on the other side, I'll put these guys, put you on the line. Tell me what you think happens, not only in today's game, but what you think, how you think Michigan fares in the Big Ten tournament. We'll talk a little Michigan hockey as well. Juwan Howard is back. Jay Billis was like, hey, man, you know, this is terrible. This is a terrible thing. He deserves all this punishment. Buddy Boeheim punches the guy in the junk. He should not get a suspension. I wonder what you guys, according to Jay Billis, what you guys think about that. We'll get to those things on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050. WTKA, the ticket.
I saw nine worse things from Ohio State that they got away with, and Juwan got suspended for.
Did you guys see the Buddy Boeheim punching the junk?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I did.
Yep.
And did you see Billis say this is wrong for him to get a suspension?
Yeah.
No, I did not.
I did. Oh, I don't know what Billis is talking about. I mean, it seems to me, and I think he did hit the guy in the nuts. It seems to me that if you do that, you probably deserve a game suspension. And Billis's point that and Billis's point that the refs didn't see it or call it on the court is one of the most inane things that I've ever heard in my life. I mean, I don't quite get it. That if the refs would have seen him hit the guy in the nuts, then it was okay to give him a suspension. But since they didn't see him hit the guy in the nuts, then it's, you know, they shouldn't suspend him. I don't know. It's a strange.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me let you hear Billis a little bit here. Yeah. While we're in the break, so you can. I think, man, that's some twisted logic, dude. That
guy went to law school too, didn't he?
Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? Here we go.
The suspension of Syracuse's Buddy Boeheim for what happened in the Florida State game is just wrong. You know, the ACC came in after the fact and decided to suspend Buddy Boeheim, and it's disproportionate to the offense. Rules are rules, and the rules of the game indicate that if play started after the fact and the action could not be reviewed, that's final. And it was final. The referees could not review the play after play started again. They missed it, and that's fine. Now, the ACC could condemn the action and issue a reprimand, but suspending Buddy Boeheim for the next game against Duke is disproportionate to the offense, and I think wrong. That effectively ends Buddy Boeheim's career. It affects the ACC tournament, and I don't think it's the right thing. Rules are rules, and those rules were written for a reason. If the referees, by rule, could go back and review the play after play had started, that's fine. Then perhaps it's a flagrant two, and Buddy Boeheim is thrown out of the Florida State game. But after the game is over, then it's over. And just like you can't review somebody stepping out of bounds or review a charge block call after the game, you can't review this.
Ah, oh, this dude is he is shilling for Jim Boeheim right now. That is some ridiculous shit he just threw in there. Come on.
Yeah, that's
he was very much on the Juwan. I mean, this is unbelievable. And not saying Juwan should have been suspended. He absolutely should have. But Buddy Boeheim punched the dude in the junk. And his dad got in the press conference after the game. It was like, oh, well, you know, it was inadvertent. He just, he
that
turned.
Was not and, it was not.
It wasn't. He turned and, you know, it was some inadvertent contact. And he said, and hey, the guy pushed him. He pushed him twice. And you can't just let a guy push it twice. So which is it, Jim? Did he inadvertently hit him or did he punch him in the junk for pushing him twice? Right. Yeah. So it's like they're shilling for Jim Boeheim here. It's him, Seth Greenberg, all these others that are just, you know, giving him a pass for being an ass.
The logic that you can't suspend a guy for an obvious dick punch after the fact because they missed it on the court. Like, man, Jay, if this game doesn't work out for you, you should be an attorney for one of the January 6th jerks.
Yeah, or he could be for Brad Davidson, too. He's a Brad Davidson stan.
And the MGO Blog crew back with us. And so, fellas, Michigan set the tip off with Indiana at 11:30. Craig Ross, do they win today? And if so, how far do the Wolverines go?
Yeah, I'm going to say they win today. I'm going to say they beat Illinois, too.
Wow.
And if they play Wisconsin, they'll beat them, too. And I'm feeling good about this team. They're going to roll it.
Wow. Taking a lot away from that Ohio State game, right? All right.
Probably not logical, given that Michigan plays every other game, it seems.
Right. I figure that's going to be Seth's point, right? What do you think, Seth?
Yeah. They lose every other game. So they're going to lose tonight. They're going to get in the tournament. They're going to not be in the playing game. They'll actually make the top seed because Wake Forest lost. So they'll actually get in as a 10 seed. They'll win their first round, and then they'll go out in the second round to a 2 seed.
All right. Brian?
Yeah, I don't think this Indiana team is a good matchup for – I think they're a good matchup for Michigan. I expect them to win fairly comfortably today. And then Illinois, I mean, it's just going to come down to shooting because they were lights out in the game that Michigan played against them. I mean, they were unconscious. And Michigan struggled, and you know, I think the big will pretty much cancel each other out. And it's who's better from behind the line. And this year, that's clearly been Illinois. So I'd expect them to win that game. And then, yeah, they'll be like a 10 seed. And then they'll make the Sweet 16. And then they'll bow out.
All right. Got to squeeze a lot into these last 10 minutes here. So first, on the spring football side, some injury news with J.J. McCarthy. But obviously, as we reported, not as severe as the rumors on social media would have you believe. No surgery, but he went and saw like the specialist, the top guy. I know he's talked to team doctors. You know, I know he saw guys who have dealt with major NFL quarterbacks' shoulders, and they all told him you don't need surgery. You need targeted stretching and you know, exercise or strengthening of a certain area, and you'll be fine. So they're limiting him this spring. Does that change your outlook for the quarterback battle for next season? First, you, Brian Cook.
Yeah, obviously it gives Cade McNamara an advantage because if J.J. McCarthy misses spring practice, he's going to miss an opportunity to put data in that will allow him to unseat the incumbent. But it's always been my opinion that they're going to go into the season with an open job and they're going to rotate, and then at some point someone will be the starter. So I don't think it affects what I expect is going to happen.
Craig?
No, I don't see any change at all. I think the quarterback rotation starter, whatever, will be settled in the fall. And I'm being Mr. Pollyanna today, but I think JJ will probably be back and fine. And the same competition we expected will exist in the fall. I don't see much change given what we know right now.
Seth?
Yeah, I think it's going to take all the way till the end of September to decide. I think that maybe this actually helps Michigan's quarterback situation overall, because I was worried about McNamara losing the job in spring and being like, well, I'm going somewhere where I could start. And I mean, to get them both to fall on the team means you're going to have both guys, and this is why you need two quarterbacks. I mean, you don't have to look any further than Penn State last year to see why you need that. But they don't really have. I mean, they got Maryland after a really, really bad non-conference slate, so they have some time against four bad defenses in September to kind of play those two guys, get them confident, decide who they want to go to Iowa, and then you play at Iowa, which you kind of want to have somebody who know. You know, I don't know if you want to have a true sophomore flinging it. So I mean, it hurts McCarthy because that's the target. You got to get to Iowa and be the guy and have the confidence and feel like you can run the offense. And you lose spring, like Brian says, you lose that data, you lose some of the coach's confidence in the fact that you can go in a very hostile environment and go win that game.
I just, if he can compete, which I expect him to be able to do, I think J.J. McCarthy is going to be the guy. It may be at the end of September, to your point. It may have games actually be the final verdict in who the guy is for the duration. But I think when the dust settles, I think J.J. McCarthy will be the guy. Experience was the separator before. Once he has some experience now, I just think the talent gap is so wide that once they're under live fire again, and you realize what this offense, the kind of production they're going to need to have next season against the best competition, I think it'll be determined that he's the guy. But again, not something that was ever going to be determined in the spring anyway, to your point, Brian and Seth. All right. So if Illinois is the kryptonite to Michigan on the basketball floor, Notre Dame is obviously the kryptonite for Michigan on the ice. So Brian Cook, we sort of said I can't really count the first two losses because those were overtime.
Right.
The end of the season, those are just flat losses. So you do have four L's against that squad. Does that get mental for this team, or are you not worried about that at all?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe. I feel like every Notre Dame game is just like what random thing happens, because they're really good at shutting down all kinds of chances and they're not very good on offense themselves. So it's just like, well, what direction did the puck bounce? Who made the mistake? And in the two games Michigan lost recently, it was Eric Portillo coming out unnecessarily on a power play and giving away a goal. And in the other one, it was the officials not looking at the world's most obvious interference call in a 1-1 game. So, I mean, you flip a coin against Notre Dame, and that's the result. So that's what's going to happen in this game, and I'm not really looking forward to it. But I'd rather play Notre Dame than anyone else at this point, because it's another opportunity to prove to yourself that you can do this. And so they are in the running for the number one overall seed, and I think they just need to do better than Minnesota State does in their tournament, and then they get the tiebreaker because they're going to be playing better teams. So there is something to play for here, but you know, worst case scenario, they're the number two overall seed in the NCAA tournament, which hasn't happened in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point that we'd rather play Notre Dame right now. I mean, this is the sort of style I suspect we may see at some juncture in the NCAA tournament, because it's the one style that tends to work against Michigan. If you come out and skate with Michigan, you're probably going to lose. If you come out and try and just sit back and block shots and wait for Michigan to make a mistake, you may have a chance. So I think it's good. You know, it's sort of curious. You know, I went to the games this weekend and they were pretty well attended. But I'm not quite sure what the point of playing two games against Michigan State was, and then playing a single game against Notre Dame this weekend. I can't figure out why. Maybe the Big Ten should just run a 4-team playoff and run a 2 out of 3 and all of them. Once you get to this juncture, as opposed to a single game against Notre Dame and a single game. Where is the finals? I don't even know where they play the finals.
Well, it's at the higher seeds' home ice. So
oh, it is. So that's good.
So if Minnesota wins, it'll be at Minnesota, and if they don't, it'll be at Michigan or Notre Dame.
Okay.
Yeah. To stick with Notre Dame, Michigan's got to be able to play Notre Dame hockey just as much as they play Michigan hockey. Like, they had a lead in three of these games they played against them. Two nothing lead in the first two games, and they gave those up to mistakes. Michigan has shown, they've been mistake prone this year. I think that's very fair to say. And it's not just the youth. It's a lot of the older guys who've been doing it too. They need to be able to play that mistake-free hockey. And I agree with Craig. Playing Michigan State is bad. Like every time Michigan plays Michigan State, they come back the next series and they're surprised by how good the next team is. Like even the beginning of the Ohio State series, it's like, oh yeah, we have to play hockey again because Michigan State is just atrocious. They are so slow. They're so unable to hold onto the puck. They don't even try to score. So like you start playing a real team again, and you go from Michigan State and their level of coaching to Notre Dame and their level of coaching, it is a shock. Michigan's got to be able to play mistake-free hockey, especially if they get a lead on these guys. They get up 1-0, they should not lose those games.
Luke Hughes, guys, is a skating highlight reel. We've seen great defensemen come through here. I mean, there's another great defenseman on this team. I think it was a Jack Johnson. Did he just break Jack Johnson's record? Is that what they said in the?
It's just
in the
Jack,
last.
No, he broke everyone else's but Jack so far. So Jack's okay. The last one. So
I thought it was Steve Richmond was the only one who he hadn't passed. But I don't know.
Is that right? Okay, I know he's three back, but I thought it was Jack Johnson that he.
I think he passed Johnson, and he's okay. A couple behind Steve.
You try to avoid hyperbole. In the moment, right? But trying to quantify just how good this dude is. I mean, everyone knew he was good coming in. Is he even better than you thought, Brian, Craig, Seth?
Yeah, I mean, he was supposed to be a version of his brother who was bigger but less dynamic, and I don't think he's any less dynamic. So, yeah, I think he's, I mean, when you talk about a defenseman who's got, 17 goals?
Yeah.
I mean, that's exceeding anyone's expectations for anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching hockey, Michigan hockey, since 1966. And I think he's the best offensive defenseman that Michigan has had ever in that period of time. You know, we've had some good ones. Werenski was a good offensive player.
Truba.
Jack. Yeah, there's been some good off, but he's still better. And he's a phenomenal skater, just an unbelievably good skater. The problem with Hughes is he gets careless defensively at times. and he's so good, and he takes some chances, and sometimes those chances lead to, you know, breakouts going the other way. But from an offensive perspective, no, you won't see better. And he's just a delight to watch. He's just fun to watch. So
he's dynamic. He's dynamic. Hopefully, if we carry that, to other sports, hopefully the Michigan basketball team is dynamic today and over the next few days in the Big Ten tournament. That's certainly what it will take for if Craig's prediction is to come true. I hope you're right, Craig. That's going to do it for us here today. The MGO Blog Roundtable. Thanks for listening to the Michigan Insider. We'll be breaking down the Michigan-Indiana game, hopefully previewing a rematch with Illinois tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK of the Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.